back, y'all. This is my first case podcast, the first podcast of 2020, and it's only fitting that we bring it in with no one other than my own, my mom, my heart, Miss Darlene. A lot of y'all might know her as Doe. So what we're aiming to do here today is just to give you the perspective of incarceration from a family member or an outside point of view, outside of the person that's actually doing the time, how prison affects everyone besides the person that's actually doing time. Because we all have loved ones and things like that, and we remove ourselves from their lives and the streets, it has a direct effect on them that a lot of us don't take account of. So here on my first case, we're trying to deliver you this different perspective, and just to let my mother tell you how it was when I mainly she can probably remember my last case when I did the 15 years, but on my first case we tend to target our first case. So, Mom, do you remember when I caught my first case?
Yeah, I remember when you caught it. It was on case court doing something.
Doing something. You know what I was doing. What happened on case court?
You were selling drugs.
And you remember what kind of drugs those was?
Rocks.
Okay. I just want to say that you don't have to have a filter. We have a broad audience. Okay. It's okay to say, you know, however you want to express yourself. And I don't want you to feel like if you say something, you may or may not get him in trouble or get in trouble. Right. There's no issues. Okay. So just be yourself. Just relax. Okay. And so rocks, right?
Yeah, rocks.
And our audience, they love you. Everyone I speak to, they, how's your mom? She's so nice. She's, you know, so everybody loves you for your authenticity. Right. And that's all we ask that you do on the mic today.
Okay.
So, rocks. So, was my memory was that I was told on by a younger peer, like, oh, Rob's around there doing this, doing that.
So, well, I can't remember that, but I saw you out there selling rocks with another family member. And you saw me and ran, but we met up at the house, yeah. Mm.
So, how did that make you feel when you seen him?
I was upset, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was upset. Tried to keep him away from that group, but down the way, if he ain't doing with this one, he with this one, and one doing worse than the other, and mm-hmm. he hanging out with, you know.
Yeah, that's because it was close quarters.
Yeah.
You have a concentration mm-hmm. of people, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, all of them was really doing negative.
Right.
In that type of situation, you know, we already low income. Everybody's mm-hmm. basically trying to better their situation. And it's not even that. It's like peer pressure at some point. It's so much of it was around you. And this was early 90s, and that was like the boom of crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. So being in where we was coming from, it was really, really hard to escape it. I mean, everybody fought for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, Rob, don't do this. Rob, go to school. Play basketball. You know, and everybody, they really, really did fight for me to not, you know what I'm saying, fall off and follow the what was going on around me so much, but it kind of caught up with me. And go ahead, Keisha.
So you were saying that people were trying to rescue you, was your word. Say, hey, Rob, play basketball. Don't get into that.
Yeah. And I got that from a lot of guys who were older than me, but they were selling drugs, and family members who, hence, you probably think I looked up to certain family members or got the drugs from certain family members, which really wasn't the cause, because he was more or less, you know, trying to shield me or keep me away from it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? But I seen them doing mm-hmm. it, so you know what I'm saying? You remember. So do you remember visiting me when I did catch my first case in juvenile?
No.
You don't remember I had the part in the middle of my hair and we was talking something? No. You don't? But yeah, you came to visit me in DH. And I was in juvenile. So as a mother, do you think when I went in jail that I was built for it? Or did you think, like, my baby, they're going to, you know what I mean?
In juvenile?
Period.
Of course I thought my baby, they're going to do whatever, yeah. I didn't think you was built, ain't no, you ain't built for no jail.
Mm. I got a question for you. Mm-hmm. So you remember when she came to visit you initially. Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel, seeing your mom on the other side like that, not being able to leave with her? I mean, do you remember that, those internal feelings?
Yeah, but I was so young. So when you're young, you just raw, like, you know what I'm saying? So you don't, you miss your family members. And this case and my last case was totally different because I just really missed my mom on the first visit. I was just happy to see her. As according to, like, when they used to visit me when I did the stretch, like, I didn't want to see them leave, you know, and it hurted me to see them leave. But, you know, it was such a relief just to see her on my first one. I was just happy to see her. And I don't know if, you know what I'm saying, I had the raw emotion or the raw feeling as an adult as I did back when I was a juvenile.
So you didn't realize the impact of your situation when you was a juvenile, but when you became an adult, you realized the importance of family, your position, and exactly how you were more in tune with your emotions, per se. Mm-hmm. And there was a greater connection because there was a greater level of maturity.
Yeah. Yep. So on my first case, I went down for selling. Well, that's mainly what it was. It was just all drug dealing. You know what I'm saying? And so when did you come to grips that I was a drug dealer? When did we share that reality? Like, you knew what was going on, I knew what was going on. Like, because at some point, you know, I had got older and grown and mm-hmm. was doing what I was doing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So did you ever accept that, like, knowing, like, you know what I'm saying? Because remember when I had the one car with the sounds in it and, you know, guys was trying to, you know.
Yes. I came to the reality, but I didn't like it. You know what I'm saying? It's like you was a man, and you know what can I do to stop you? You would do it anyway. Mm-hmm. I tried moving, and you went back down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you remember the time you crashed my car and didn't tell me?
Yes. Yes, so, I do. You thought you did it.
I thought I did it, but the neighbor told on you.
Yeah, I know.
The guy with the pit bulls, you know what I'm saying? So.
How do you think you did it?
I don't know because sometimes I don't know. I think she told me that, like, she didn't tell me, right. So I just seen the damage and I didn't know if it was hitting skip. I did it that, but all right,
Mom,
but,
my car hit. I'm like, what?
Yeah, so I remember I had the wagon with the nice little sounds, and everybody loved that car.
Yeah.
But.
Good Taurus.
Yeah, it was a Taurus, yeah. So,
Black
Taurus with the tinted windows. Yeah. So do you remember, all right, I got pinched by CMHA. Do you recall this time I was selling drugs on Case Court? CMHA caught me, because this might be another funny story too. CMHA caught me, but they didn't find any drugs on me.
Right.
But they confiscated like $800.
Yes,
I had lottery tickets on me, so, but I was kind of like a juvenile. But I said, I just cashed the lottery and I won. So I had to go to court. They took the money.
Yeah.
But you went to court. We both went to court. And they ended up refunding the money. But it took a while to get the money back.
Not
so funny
all
story.
Of it. We didn't get all of it back. Maybe like 7 something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was $800 that they took from me.
Okay, and the thing, this is the story though, because I went on about doing my business or what doing my business and what. So the case go on. I'm like, dang, you know, I'm calling, trying to check up on my money and stuff, you know. So she keep on, she ain't telling me. She don't want to talk about it. Oh, forget it. Don't worry about it. So some time go past and I'm like, Mom, what happened with that money I took? She said, oh, I bought their school clothes. And I got your brother and stuff, their school clothes. Right. So that was funny. That was funny, you know. So, I mean, we had, you know, it was a lot of ups and downs because, you know what I'm saying, the worst thing that came out of this for me was a drug addiction that really hurt her the most. It wasn't to crack or nothing like that. It was another drug, but it came from the same peer pressure, the same dudes, the same everything. Yeah. But as I picked up the habit of drug selling, you know, as I got older, I picked up a drug addiction. And those were our worst days for us as a mother and son. You know, so I know how that hurted her to see me that way, and you know, and that's probably those memories. She probably got plenty of them.
Yeah, I do.
But yeah,
I don't think so. You should be so hard on yourself though, because I think that was, you just said it was peer pressure. It was inescapable due to the environment that you were in. If everybody was doing it, I'm the same difference of you, when you started selling drugs, it's the environment and the people you surround.
But so many people lost their lives or killed themselves over that drug. It should have taught them a lesson. Well, this is doing this. He lost a lot of good friends behind that drug.
But if he's already addicted, you know what I mean? It's not going to, you couldn't convince him.
No.
Nobody could convince him, because once you become addicted to something, it's a disease.
Okay.
You can't control it. Thankfully, you're okay.
Yeah, thankfully, yeah. So I know she got stories, and that's some of the worst, like me, terrorizing my little sister and stuff like that. You remember Kev, who no longer with us? I'm sure that's who you're referencing to when you say lost their lives. You remember that day he was outside waving that stick around and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was...
Then Tiffany.
Yeah.
Jumping over a bridge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what happened with Kev?
Kev was different. He didn't actually lose his life because of it, but Kev was a known user of the drug, which we're talking about is PCP, known in the hood as wet. So, you know, I had brought Kev up to my mom's house a couple times, but it was this one instance where he was outside, he was high as hell, and he was waving his branch around. He got, Kev got shot. It wasn't wet related. It was a female. It's a long story, you know what I'm saying? But as well as Stan, he got stabbed. And these were some of my closest friends, you know what I'm saying? But like I said, we was all, you know, dibbling, dabbling with the PCP at the time, you know? So, and with Tiffany, when she committed suicide, was my mother talking about, she went over the bridge. She had a lot on her head. But I really don't know if it was related to that. So, with that being said, I really want to move forward because she probably can remember a lot more when I was doing the 15 years. I want to ask you, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, did you ever, like, when they said 15 years, did you think that, like, you would see me again? Like, right here?
No, I didn't think. I knew I would see you again. I knew I would see you again.
So outside of prison?
Outside of prison, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you held on to hope?
Yes, I held on, yes.
Okay, because that was some of my, you know, like, I didn't know, like, when they said that long, you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel at that time. Mm-hmm. And she's such a humble person. I'm like, fuck that judge. Fuck, she like, don't say that. I'm like, what you mean? She just gave me all this. She like, don't say that. I'm like, Mom, are you serious? You know what I'm saying? Like, literally, fuck her. That's how I was on it. You know what I'm saying? And I had so much contemplation going through my mind, you know what I'm saying, that I can't do this. That's a lot of time. And my crime didn't warrant that amount of time.
Exactly.
Okay.
Never seen me getting that amount of time.
Exactly. And with all the appeals, I thought it would come down to less time, but the money, it didn't make a difference. He still had to do it.
So you guys appealed the sentence?
Of course.
That's something
people
that's rare.
Told me, don't waste your money, don't waste your money. I'm like, who kid is this? You know, if it was yours, you'd do whatever you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. You know, I saved and bonus checks and everything just for the appeals.
Wow.
Yep, and it's ironic because when I exhausted all my appeals in prison, I, you know, I would go around guys, they would be, you know, pumping iron or getting buff or working out. And they was like, go on, jump in, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, no, I'm cool. I'm about to be out of here soon. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I hadn't accepted it, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. as my reality. I knew it was my reality, but I hadn't accepted a 15-year sentence as my reality. Mm-hmm. So when we exhausted all our appeals, that's when I really, really, it was about 9 years in. It took us about 8 years, yeah. didn't it? Mm-hmm. Where we really, like, you know, they couldn't really
do nothing.
And we fought, like, we had appeals lawyers, and she stayed down for me the whole time. Like, you know, like, also I lost friends, I lost cousin, like Tino passed, my grandma passed.
Yeah. Both grandmas
passed. You know what I'm saying, while I was in there. You know. But it was 8-9 years in when I realized, like, oh, you here. Mm-hmm. Them appeals was over and all that. I knew it, you know what I'm saying? But they gave me hope. That's what, like, it wasn't money not spent worth, because the appeals, honestly, it gave me hope that I would get out, you know what I'm saying?
It gave me hope, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it helped, you know what I'm saying? That's so.
Right. Yeah, it got you through, looks like, the bulk of your time.
Yeah, so I'm looking like, oh, this, any day now, I'll be gone. So, it's a mindset, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When you know you have to do something, you have to do it.
Did you have a personal attorney?
Yeah, we had a personal appeals attorney. See, first and foremost, this is how I got that amount of time, because I was dealing with an attorney that I dealt with as a drug dealer.
And as a juvenile.
As a juvenile and as a drug dealer.
Okay.
So she wasn't built to fight felonious assault cases or yet had clout in the adult system where she can, you know, you know how attorneys move, and they build bonds and friendship with certain judges and things
and
like
prosecutors.
That. Prosecutors.
Mm-hmm. Because what I remember about that is when we were sitting in the courtroom, my attorney, the prosecutor, and the judge had a meeting, and she was like, well, it's not going to be good. So why would you come out after the meeting unless you done said something there? We do this and do that. They didn't really pay no money. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, we'll give them all this time. I didn't like her.
She said it's not going to be good before she went into the meeting or when she came out
when
of the
meeting?
When she came out. So, to me, it sounds like she, did she really advocate in there?
No.
Her advocacy was from a very juvenile standpoint. It wasn't, because when I caught my case, I was, I had a lot of good positive things going on for myself. I was working, you know, I was helping raising a child at the time. I had a lot of positive things going on at the time, which she didn't really, hence another reason I got railroaded, because I had people willing to speak on my behalf. And this was one of my appeals, because she didn't allow them the chance to speak. That's a Fifth Amendment law or right, whatever, however you say it. You know, none of my family members, she didn't advocate for me to let them speak up for me. So some of the things she spoke on, I really understand now, which I didn't. So she spoke, this was kind of from a juvenile standpoint. She was like, well, he comes from a single-parent household, which was, I mean, it's common for us.
Yeah.
But now, as I've gotten older, I know the importance of a dual household, like a man, a father, mm-hmm. you know. So when she said that, that was from a juvenile standpoint, because I was 24, 25.
24.
Yeah, I was 24 at the time. So that, you're not speaking as a, you know what I'm saying, like, I'm already an adult mm-hmm. now, you know what I'm saying? But that was how she used to, that, you know, fight for me as a juvenile.
Right. So it sounds like she was seeking sympathy from the court by saying he comes from a single family home. Like, that's kind of something you should take into consideration when you are listening to the case or mitigating over it. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
But I understand as you don't, because you were an adult.
And I was, and it was all like, what did you say? We were seeking
sympathy
from the courts, because I was caught at the scene of the crime. It wasn't me, you know. I didn't threaten to take this to trial, or you know what I'm saying. I had got all the findings of the case. I just wanted, you know what I'm saying, to be treated fairly. Mm-hmm. You think they gave me too much time, huh?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the way, I just couldn't believe it. It was, oh, we gonna give you 5 years for 7, and it didn't run consecutively, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It ran concurrent. That means said 5 and 5.
Each charge was ran consecutively when they should have been ran concurrently.
Yes.
And it would have just gave me like 7 years, which was the agreement I actually had with my lawyer.
Mm-hmm. And signed the papers too, because he pleaded. You know, he got the plea deal. But it just was, they gave him too much time. Murder somebody. You don't get 10 years or so. And I'm thinking like, what? My son ain't murdered nobody. You know, he thought he did, but he didn't.
Okay. On the day he was sentenced, can you take us through kind of like when the verdict came down and when the amount of sentence, like how did you feel? What was going through your mind? Like,
sitting there nervous. Yeah, and they came in and told us the time. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't stand up, and I just fell on the floor, and I looked at Rob, and he just cried for 1 second or minute or so to me, like, just 1 minute, and he couldn't believe it either. Mm-hmm. He couldn't believe it either.
I heard them in the back of the courtroom crying, and you know, so that kind of did something to me. And the thing is, like, out of all that, that might have been the only, I didn't really break down then, but I kind of got a little emotional.
Yeah.
But throughout the whole time, I'm like, I would say to myself, like, I would be in the cell alone, like, you ain't gonna cry, you can't cry. Like, I never cried. You know what I'm saying? Because I seen, like, during the 15 years, I seen grown men who's doing like 3 or 4 years, like break down in front of me. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you see that type of stuff. Yeah. So, you know, and then, you know, people say like, you did, this is now. They're like, oh, you did 15 whole years? Whoa, I could never, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. How you do it? I said, if you have to do it, you have to do it.
Right.
But yeah, I remember, because they said, I thought the charges was ran concurrent, so I was like, I was trying to do the math in my head, and the lawyer, she was confusing me too, because she didn't even know.
Oh, she knew it was gonna be bad, because like she told me that out in the hallway. It's gonna be bad.
So, did she not break down that this time would be?
It was supposed to be ran concurrently. The lawyer, on the strength, okay, I had just I was released from post release control, but I never signed off on the post release control papers. So due to the fact that they still had me on post release control, this is another issue that was kind of raised, but I shouldn't have still been on post release control, because I completed it, but the court still had me on post-release control. So the fact that I was on post-release control gave them the right to run it consecutively. Hence one of the main reasons why they ran it consecutively. Mm. You know?
Wow.
And not to mention my victim, you know, they was they were Caucasian.
And elderly.
But they came at me. I didn't have a weapon. So that's neither here nor there. I took their weapon. I had nothing but my hands. But yeah, it's a long story and it's kind of emotional, so I won't go that far into it. So, hence what the lawyer said, Mom. You did, you know, raise all three of us as pretty single, right?
Yes.
And do you think that was difficult?
No, not to me.
Because you did what you had to do?
I did what I had to do.
So, as a parent, seeing my spiral, you know, seeing some of the stuff. Like, when I first went to DH, did that embarrass you?
No, didn't embarrass me. No. Mm-mm.
You know what I mean, though? Like,
my son is in jail. No. Mm-mm.
Did you have any of your counterparts, friends, family members that had kids in jail?
Yes, I had a sister. Jackie, man, her son was in jail before. Mm-hmm. My brother, he's been in jail for 10 years.
So. On a couple occasions, right? You talking about Rodney?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you were familiar with the system and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. So, yeah, so, I mean, so it don't feel like, so you don't feel like, you know what I'm saying, as a parent... You know, you're proud of your kids naturally. So at that moment, did it just, you know, was you not proud or did you still, you know, like, oh, my son is a great guy or, you know what I'm saying? Or do you feel like I got what I deserve?
What you deserve?
No, let's speak on it.
No, you didn't get what you deserve. Nobody deserved that. I mean, you was trying to hustle like everybody else, you know, get your little tennis shoes and jackets or whatever, you know, you wanted to look good just like everybody else, and you knew what they was doing to get it, so you had to do it.
Well, did you feel like perhaps if you were able to provide some of those things that could have or would have stopped him from?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
It probably wouldn't have, though.
Mm-hmm. I think because we lived in the projects that it all happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But everywhere, the thing about it is, the projects was one thing, but it all starts in the projects. That's where it begins, but everything else at that time was becoming so ghetto. So when we moved up to 125th, they wasn't hustling, but they were gangbanging. They had a lot of folks up there. It was called the Folks, and right where we moved to, it was kind of like they called it Hell's Kitchen. And they used to have a lot of meetings and stuff up there. When, you know, they tried to recruit me a couple of times, but, you know, I'm from down the way, like, so that was, you know, that was my thing. And even when she moved up there, I would catch the bus from down the way. So we got to talk about this, though. Remember I fell asleep on the bus?
Yes, yes, I remember you fell asleep on the bus. They took you around St. Clair. Someone robbed you. I'm washing my hair. I jump in my car, which I don't even remember the car.
I remember it. It was that bucket you had, like your first one, the floor mother. Remember that bucket?
Oh,
it
was
like
the floor
the
was
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
you remember
the
that
floor,
one?
Yeah. The
yeah.
floor was
you had
gone.
That on Continental, right?
Yeah.
I mean on Superior.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that one. So.
Oh my goodness.
So I really
yes.
I had to. Go ahead, Mom.
And I remember him running across the street. They robbed me. He ain't have on no shoes. I'm like, oh my God,
shoes?
My baby.
Yeah,
they took
his
belt, his shoes, and he running across the street.
Oh,
yep,
was it?
I was hustling at the time, so I think that was the last time I might have got on the bus too. But I fall asleep on the 3. So it takes me around to Lakeshore to St. Clair. So I'm like, can I stay on here till it turn around? He like, no, it ain't turn around. It's the last stop. You got to get off. Mm-hmm. So I get off. I'm walking to the payphone to call her. I see these dudes. They're in the car. You know how you just get that feeling?
Yeah.
Like, boom, they busted you. I said, oh, shit. So The worst thing about getting robbed, because this was my actually only first time getting robbed, first and only, mm-hmm. haven't been robbed since then, maybe nothing like that. Okay, so they take me behind Sister Raffy's on St. Clair, but it was the way they talk to you. Bitch ass, get over here, bitch. Get over here, hoe ass. I'm like, you don't even know. I'm like, you got the gun on me. You take the stuff, you know what I'm saying? So, but they're talking to you. They're degrading you, humiliating you to the point where you just want to be like, whatever, do what you going to do. Like, I'm, you know.
They want you to, like, man up and start up something so they could give a reason to shoot you.
Yeah. But, like, what is that? That's unnecessary. If you're taking my stuff already at gunpoint, you don't have to call me all these names and unnecessary, like, you know. So, I remember what I had on. Had on a Nautica coat. They took the Nautica coat, Nautica everything, corduroys, and the brand new Patrick Ewings. Okay. They had just came out. This was their first release. Mm-hmm. The Patrick Ewings with the ball on them. So, we were wearing them with the 33 ball on them. Yeah. They took my shoes. This probably was my second day with the Ewings. Took my coat. That's what my package was. I probably had about an ounce of drugs in there, a quarter ounce or something like that. They took that, but they didn't take my chain. I don't know how they missed the chain. It was a little rope I had, but I'm going to the car. She picking me up. I don't have no shoes on, no nothing.
Was it cold? Was it snow?
It wasn't snow.
It wasn't snow.
But it was like, it was a little cold, but it wasn't cold, freezing cold or nothing like that.
Were you afraid for your life, or you just kind of knew they just
wanted to stay? I was just in shock. Like, you know, when they was gone, they took the stuff. I was cool because, you know, I didn't get shot or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to get home. You know what I mean? Like, it happened. At the time, I was scared, but I don't know if I was afraid for my life because I was just in the moment. But, yep.
So, did you try to, like, get revenge, look for him, or you just chalked it as
I wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't have been able to pick him out in the lineup. Or, I wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? Nope. Mm-hmm. I was out of bounds. I was on St. Clair. I'm from down the way. So, you know, they, yep. So, that was one of those things where I was like, I ain't going to be on the bus. So I started making sure I kind of drove from here on out. Mm-hmm. Hence the reason why I started, you know, driving at like 16, 17. Mm-hmm. And another reason to hustle, though.
That's what I was going to say. Wow. Okay, so you got you're in court. You said you fell down?
Yes, it's like I just
passed out or legs gave
out? And my legs gave out, yes. Okay. Yeah, okay. Second time that happened. But yeah, where I just.
When the first time, was that related to anything?
No.
Your son?
No.
Okay. Okay, so after he got sentenced, he left the court. You left, went home. What did you do? How did you feel?
We were in shock. Then Rob called and said, did she really give me all that time? How much time is it? You know? Mm. He said, yeah. Then he asked Nikki to marry him.
Who's Nikki?
No, I didn't. See, this is why you...
Well, hey, that's why we're here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
I don't think I did.
Yeah.
You were trying to secure your relationship with Nikki throughout your
probably
time. Yeah,
do you don't remember?
I don't know. I don't think that's accurate, man.
I promise.
Yeah.
Too bad Nikki's not here to confirm or deny that.
Well, that's who I was with at the time, and that taught me a lot too. That situation, you know, because I think within my first or second year, she had a baby, right?
Yeah, two. Mm-hmm.
Two.
Yes.
Back to back. So that taught me a lot. You know what I'm saying? That was very, very humbling. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because we was together. We had been together for about 7 years. Maybe longer when I caught my case. Mm-hmm.
So you guys were corresponding, writing, like on a regular basis, talking on the phone, still trying to keep the relationship going?
Not long. It didn't.
It didn't last long while I was incarcerated, no.
Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel when you found out?
Oh, like I said, it was very humbling, but everything, I was very sober. So I knew everything I was dealing with. At 15, I'm like, 15 years, it's over. These relationships not going to last. Mm-hmm. So, and I was aware of it, but I didn't think it would happen that fast. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I just wanted, you know what I'm saying, like, at this time, I know this might sound immature, but I was like, just don't have a baby on me. You're going to do what you do as a female or whatever, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't want, you know what I'm saying? But then once reality started to set in and I was like, okay. But I had a lot of little friendships come and go during my 15 years. So, but, you know, my mother, the whole time, I depended on her every month. She sent me something. Every month. So she sacrificed every month I could depend on the money order for my mother. And that's how I survived. I really survived. I stretched it. I doubled it up. You know what I'm saying? And she was like clockwork, you know what I'm saying? And now that I see her struggle today or whatever, I know her sacrifice, you know what I'm saying, with doing that. So I love her for that. And, you know, that was huge. That was huge. That was part of me, you know what I'm saying? Because you can get hungry in there and you can, you know, people have to, they resort to stealing. And, you know, my talents was, you know, I was a sports gambler in there, you know, so that's what my thing was. But, you know, with everything you do, it comes a cost, so you don't want to do it in abundance. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to be gambling where you're getting in trouble or, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I try to do it where, you know what I'm saying?
Hmm. So you said that you doubled it up. How do you double money a money order that you receive? You hustle in prison?
That's a great question. So commissary in prison is currency. Okay. Stamps, honey buns, soups, Kool-Aids, coffees. So I knew what everyone liked. So if I would go to the store and I can afford, after I get my toiletries and all that, my deodorant and everything out the way, if I can afford 10 honey buns, I'll get 10 extra honey buns. I didn't drink soda, so I would always get sodas as in currency. Mm-hmm. So what I would do with the sodas is, if someone wanted a soda that were reliable, I would front them 2 sodas for 3 back. That's how we did it in there. So it was like entrance, but they called it running the store. So you can get 2 for 1 is common. It's called a 2 for 1. So if I gave you a box of Little Debbie's, you're going to give me 2 back. And that's how it went. You know what I'm saying? So with that, you know, people sometimes will try to play, but you know, certain people, but that's how you know what I'm saying, make more. But sometimes you'll get some of the things that you need instead of 2 boxes of Debbie's, give me a box of Debbie, and I'll need a toothbrush this month, so I won't have to buy a toothbrush. Yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying? So the interest would, you know what I'm saying, well, I need a few stamps, or I need a greeting card. You know, I'll give you this box of Debbie's, return the box of Debbie's, and you kept them in your little hookup, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you got, like a clientele, certain people you trusted, certain people like new guys you stayed away from, guys on their way home, you know, you kind of, you know, but if you had guys who were grounded, you knew when they, you know what I'm saying?
Grounded meaning life. What is grounded?
Just going to be there for a second, though, yep. Oh. Just going to be there for a second. You know, he, like, wasn't going nowhere. He, like, he's been on the pod with you for, like, 6-7 months. You can pretty much trust him. You know what he ain't on no BS type. You know what I mean? Mm. It's like your neighbors. You know what I'm saying? Like if you get a new person, you don't know.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Good
that community. But they call it running a store. Oh. So I kind of like did that, and you know, dabbled in the sports gambling. I was, you know, booking tickets and stuff. Hence the reason I want to see what's going on in this Philly game.
Well, you're doing something far more important. I want to have a question to you about toiletries, but I also want to bring it back to your mom. So you said that it was consistent that she, every month you got those money orders. I want to know from you, was it hard? Did you struggle to try to keep up with making sure he had that? I remember you mentioned before you worked double shifts and that.
No,
like,
not double shift. It was like my year-end bonus, which was a lot of money, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, I just considered it as something I had to do. I mean, car payment, rob, you know, like you write down your light bill, phone bill, rob, you know, the next month, you know, you just write it down and have to go there.
So he was,
you know, right. I didn't want him to ask for nothing or had everything. Oh, you hot? A fan is coming.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
TV, whatever. Oh, your fan broke? Okay, another fan comes. Mm-hmm. Shoes, yeah. You really picked those out, though.
Yeah. And I tried to find, you know, I tried to find every which way to, you know, give her a break. You know what I mean? Like, if I was talking to a female at the time, if they could help, you know what I'm saying, do this or do that, or, you know what I mean? Or if I had friends who was in rotation, they would send me something, or, you know, things like that.
What is rotation?
They would come around, you know, like you want to spare them, like every 3 months or something.
Oh, okay.
Every, you know, like I might call Pimpy.
Okay.
I might call him this month, I would give him a break, and then I might ask Mike, could you do something for me? He might, you know. Then I'm, you know, so it's like, but you didn't want to be like having them depending on them or. Really, you know what I'm saying? Because they have kids and lives and stuff like that. So it was convenient to have my mother still.
Consistency breeds security.
Convenient.
Them the words you talk about, right?
Convenient?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You don't like that word?
No, it wasn't convenient.
For me, it was.
Oh.
So what was it for you?
It wasn't. Love, I mean, just love for me, you know, he had to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, any mother should know, you know, I won't eat as long as they eat, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that probably was a wrong use of the word convenient, but you get the drift.
Are you still have that game on your mind? You're a little distracted.
No.
Wow. I just find it profound. You know, my story, my mom has six kids, four of my siblings were in the system. One being, you know, my oldest brother. I can remember her being wore out because he was recidivated so many times. So
being wore out.
Wore. Unable to keep up. Like you said, you wanted to make sure that he never wanted or had to ask for something.
Right.
I can remember when she first started, when he first got into the system, her having that same mentality, but over time, just going in and out, she was just wore out. And it was just more like, okay, you didn't learn your first time. Now it's your second time. At what point are you going to learn, you know?
Well, I thought I was blessed to have him around because what had happened, they could have killed him.
Wow.
Yes. And it's like, he didn't know what happened. We just talked the other day. And I told him that you said you were dreaming. He was like, wow. In the muffler shop, wow. Yeah.
He said he was dreaming when the actual crime happened?
Yes. He thought he was dreaming, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how did it feel to not be able, like as a mom now, I can't imagine not being able to access my child. you know, like not having access to my child. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. How did you feel when you went to visit him?
That was a sight. Just to see him walking, you know, just walking towards you, you know, it's like, yeah, he all right. Mm-hmm. He all right. Mm-hmm. Like, go up there, like, hey, everybody. Yeah, just the sight of him walking towards you, you know, mm-hmm. give him a hug or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It keeps you going until you go visit again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what kind of car you got this year or whatever. There it is right there. We trying to look and see. And
on the visits, we people watch. Well, after we catch up and stuff, we get the people watching. We had a little routine where I would get a, what was the honey bun
honey
for the
bun
birthday?
On the,
yeah, like a Cinnabon. Uh-huh. They would make it their business to, you know, come down around my birthday.
And yeah,
that was
so
nice.
It was. Yeah, but it, like we said, that's the bittersweet part, just seeing them leave, mm-hmm. and, you know, like, seeing, you know what I'm saying, how their lives are continually, like, she went through a couple different cars, and, you know what I'm saying, things like that, you know.
Was there ever a moment for you where, I mean, I know in general, you wish you were there. You know, obviously you want to be home, but was there ever an instance or an incident that occurred where you just wish you were able to get home to be with your mom?
When she lost her mom.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a time I wished he was here when I first found out about my heart condition. I came up there to tell him, but, you know, it was just me and him, and I'm like, well, I can't tell him this, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave him on a sour note. So I never tell him about my heart. And then it got so severe, I had to. And he was like, hold on, Ma, I'll be there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That kind of choked me up. And I was praying, like, oh, I could do this. Mm-hmm. He'll be home in 2 years. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold.
I remember in his interview, did you hear his interview? He said that was one of his biggest fears.
Yes. That he was going to lose you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, be strong. I'll be home. Yeah. But my attention was going down there to tell him about the heart condition and all that, but mm-hmm. I never did.
But you don't. She always used to talk about, you old, I'm old. No, but you don't never look at your mom as old. Because mm-hmm. when we, you know, we always... probably physical appearance, you know. They'd be like, that's your mom? That's your son? No one knew.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? We used to always get that a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
even the lawyer said, I can't believe this is your son. You know.
Mm. And I know when she would be like, well, I'm getting old. I'm old. I'm like, Mom, you're not old. You only, you know. But that's me saying it. You know what I mean? You. Mm. Me, I'm never getting old. I don't know what y'all talking about.
Okay. Okay. So we went through the 15. Let's talk about the day you came home.
Oh, I remember that like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. She cried. She was so happy. It was emotional.
Very emotional.
It was, that's all you can say. It was just very emotional because I was there. I had made it. You know what I'm saying? As I got in the car, we walked to the car, all that. It was just like, and,
the people, the prisoners out the window was hollering his nickname, and it was just, it was nice.
Yeah. So, in prison, they used to call me Rob Gotti. Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at
so,
all.
And they was hollering out the window because,
Gotti,
yeah, they was like, free a real nigga. Free.
Yeah.
And stuff
so we
like
stood
that.
There for like 5 minutes and just
and
let
took
him
it
look
in.
Around and, yeah.
Yeah. It was just surreal. But, they got me a phone and I was in that phone. So, because... If you remember, Ma, when they first started, the phones that scrolled down, they had flip phones and all that out.
Right.
So I'm like, no, I want one of them phones that scroll down, that you can scroll down. You can scroll down. That's when the smartphone really had came out. Mm-hmm. But you, I'm like, oh, you can scroll down and look.
Is that
look.
The BlackBerry?
No, it no, was it was it a was Galaxy.
Galaxy okay. 5, I
think. Yeah, I think I might start off a 5 or 6. But you can, like, when they first came out mm-hmm. and they had the ability to scroll down, I seen it on the commercial and had, like, fell in love.
You fell in love.
Man, I'm like, oh, they can do that. Them phones can do that. Look, you can scroll it down and the screen is moving down. So this is the reason why I kind of missed out on summer taking that moment in. Mm-hmm. Because I got that phone. And this is why I know we're in a head-down society. Mm-hmm. Because we rode past places that I, when I did take time to look up, but I was in that phone, you know, mm-hmm. trying to look at it. So this is kind of where we at as a people, because we're always in our phones. So I missed a lot of moments. Like, she was like, look, Randall Park Mall isn't there anymore. You know, I looked briefly, but I didn't really take certain things in, mm-hmm. which I should have. See, like, on the ride in, you take it in. You feel it. The moment you get inside a police car, everything changes because you know you're not free anymore. Mm-hmm. Hence, when I did take that ride down 71, you seeing it and you knowing, like, look, oh, wow. So I kind of failed to do that when I got free because I was looking in that cellular device. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I wanted it so bad, and I, you know. But that's where we were, though, as mm-hmm. a, you know what I'm saying? And it was mm-hmm. necessary. But, yeah, it was that moment, and when everybody came over to the house for the barbecue and all that, it was really, really emotional. That's when I shed the tears. That's when I choked up.
No, no.
Yeah.
No.
With my sister.
We was coming home, and his brother was standing outside.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he saw his brother, and, oh, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you remember that?
Like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because he hadn't seen him for the whole 15 years.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what's up. So, we're going to wrap this one up. You got any more questions, Keisha?
I think I'm good. I just want to know how you feel now. You've been out for quite some time.
My God. I'm elated. Oh, my God. It's the song. It's like, it's made by Mary J. Blige. If anybody want to hear it, it's called Colors.
Okay.
Colors.
Yes. And it's like, I can see in color now, mm-hmm. you know, since he here. You know, it's just, I was so gloomy. So mm-hmm. I'm still in that way because it happened for 15 years, you
right.
know, been in a funk. Like, you know, I couldn't eat. When it happened, I couldn't eat, couldn't bathe, couldn't do anything, just sit there. Just wow. sit in a rocking chair. Couldn't eat or, oh my God, it was terrible.
You felt like you was in a state of depression or something?
Oh yes, I was, yeah. Mm-hmm. And still today, but it's more, I mean, I can't bring myself out of it.
Okay.
Because, you know, I used to go out and dress up, do my hair, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now it's just, I'm just elated that he's home.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. When he first came home, I have to ask this, were you afraid that he was going to end up being
nope.
back in the streets?
Mm-mm. Nope. I prevented that. I had him a car,
mm-hmm.
right jobs lined up. He worked at my job for a few weeks or whatever
mm-hmm.
until somebody hated on him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no, basically had the money, a place to stay, a mm-hmm. car to drive, and go look,
mm-hmm.
get a job. Mm-hmm.
You had a plan.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Rob, did you ever feel, since you came home, have you ever been tempted?
To what?
Hustle or?
Nah.
Go in the streets?
Nah.
Okay.
Or I ain't have no temptation to do anything that led me to prison. Because on that last one, it wasn't hustling. Hustling what brought me to there, you know, hence the reason for this being my first case. But it wasn't hustling that took me to prison, so I haven't had a desire to do a mind-altering drug such as PCP. Mm-hmm. So.
That's great. Never.
That's great.
Yeah. Every night running down, come and get robbed. And then he's like, okay, I'm cool. Dope coming. I'm all right.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about now?
No. Before? No, this was before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We made it.
Yeah. That's great. And I can tell that you guys have a really good relationship.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my dog.
Yes. And he love you.
That's my dog.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So your bond didn't get broken.
Oh, no.
Prison didn't break you guys.
Mm-mm. No.
But it can, though. Like you said, with certain families, you know what I'm saying? The reason, this might be a success story, it might not be, but with prison, you know what I'm saying, it can tear families apart because I could have lost her while I was in there, mm-hmm. or she could have lost me while I was in there because we're apart. But, you know, and that would have been the worst, you know what I'm saying? Or for us to, you know, just go and tell her, she could have said, forget him, I'm moving on with my life, I have to do what I have to do for me mm-hmm. to get better, you know what I'm saying? And that's what happened in certain families. You have families who, mothers, they're not going to be as forgiving and as loving as my mother. Mm-hmm. You'll have a mom who will turn their kid in and say, go, you know, like, because that's what it does, you know what I'm saying? Because we that's the purpose of this podcast, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To show different differences, you know what I'm saying? All of them not going to be success stories, you know what I'm saying? When you get locked up, you know what I'm saying? I seen so many dudes that was just lonely, no nothing. Mm. Not, you know what I'm saying?
So they waiting on a monthly commissary, and mm-hmm. which is less than what?
$17 a month. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got guys dealing with $17 a month, and then you got guys who burned a lot of bridges on the streets, you know. It's just so many walks of life in there, you know what I'm saying? But
to live off of $17 a month.
It's impossible. It's impossible in any society. Like, I don't care. It's impossible.
Less than a dollar.
It's impossible. You know what I'm saying? So.
Wow. I did write down a question I was curious about when you were saying that you doubled up. You said that you had to buy toiletries. So you didn't get tissue and toothbrush, and that wasn't standard issuance?
It is, but it isn't. So they have a, well, when I first came in, they used to give you this, it's called state, whatever. They give you state soap. It's so much lye in it. People just used it to clean their sneakers and things like that and wash their whites out. And this was the standard soap that they gave you. And they used to pass it out in Lorraine or whatever. And Lorraine, like, everyone's indigent, really. No one has money. But when you got down the road, more or less, you had to ask for it or you had to get indigent packages. So toiletries, like, if you got instead of a standard toothbrush, if they issue one, you one, what's this, about a quarter?
About 3 inches.
Mm-hmm. They about a 3-inch toothbrush was issued to you, and the bristles were, I'm just cheap, like 2 uses and they're really done.
Yeah.
And they keep them that small so you don't make shanks out of them.
Okay.
So you can barely reach the back of your teeth or your mouth with it. Mm-hmm. So the reason for that, I don't know, but those are, no, you want to buy a decent toothbrush.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? A state toothpaste. So, you can brush your teeth with state toothpaste and your breath still stink. That's how cheap it is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So you
were able to buy a longer toothbrush even though you could make a shank out of that?
That, yeah, but they really wasn't. They was like soft, and you know how like the big Colgate toothbrushes are?
Oh,
they have like,
okay, yes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, so we could get like good toothbrushes off commissary, but they made sure they wasn't.
Yeah, shank ready.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. And they issue you, you get state clothes, you know, you get three pairs of tighty whities, mm-hmm. three t-shirts, and
how
three pairs of socks.
How did you feel about those? You didn't like those ever.
No, I preferred the boxers or boxer briefs, but I wore them because I liked to play basketball. I used to play sports in those, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But you get those like every 6 months.
Just
three pair
every 6 months.
Wow.
Okay, yep. What else did you get?
You get three pair of socks, three pair of drawers, and three white t-shirts. And then you can trade your state uniform, which we got two of those, and you can trade it in for a newer one.
Oh, okay.
But, if you know, you had people who worked in, not commissary, they called it the quartermaster, where the clothes were issued from. Mm-hmm. And guys who worked in there, they would do things like, I didn't have the standard. I had maybe five uniforms.
And why is that? How did you get the five uniforms? Did you pay them three cokes or
however? Exactly. You know how it worked. You know exactly. Yep. So probably in cigarettes, mm-hmm. cokes, envelopes, whatever they wanted, you know what I'm saying? Okay. Summer sausages. So you would have, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so you did have a lot of things that other people didn't have while you were in there.
Oh yeah.
And that was because of your money that you got every month?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep, and me making it stretch too. So it all coming about, you know, the hustling, it played a part. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people who didn't have people to do for them in prison, which a lot of people don't, they turn to their natural talents or they find one. A lot of people take up gambling, and they don't eat all the time off gambling. They'll lose everything, but then sometimes they'll have good days. Mm-hmm. But you have people who draw. Not, you know, remember some of the cards I used to send?
Yeah.
You have guys that all they do is make cards and draw, and then you have guys who wash clothes or iron clothes.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? They might even clean
so
cells.
So is it a state issue iron? How would they
it's
iron
a good iron, and it's just on the ironing board in your bay, your pot.
Mm.
And it's a state issue one, so you would, like, have to wait your turn to iron.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So you would be like, I'm next, or, you know, it was a rotation.
Oh, okay,
like,
yeah.
So, but it was something to have neat iron clothes, although you were incarcerated.
I can't hear you.
Never mind.
Come on, go
it's
ahead.
Okay. I guess I'm just surprised that it was a thing to have iron pressed clothes, although you're incarcerated. You're still mindful of the way you look.
No, that's what the visitor told me. He was sharp when he came out, his creases and shirt looking nice, even though he just got patted down back there, asshole, out.
Yeah.
You know, but he came in, he fixed himself up and looked it real nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And that's
fresh
what
fresh cut, which I was amazed. He's like, oh, I went to the barbershop yesterday. You know, how you get into a barbershop? Yeah, I did this and that. Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. I would never wish that on another mother ever, but it made me and my son real close.
Yep.
Real close. So.
Wow.
I love you too, Ma. Welcome. Thank you. Our first interview of 2020 is the one and only, my mom, Miss Doreen Doe. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for having the courage to do this and sit down with us. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Keisha, you want to say anything before we wrap this up?
Yeah, you didn't seem nervous at all. You did great. In fact, I felt like you were a better interviewer than me. Some of your questions, I'm like, whoa. You did good. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And for sharing your story.
Okay.
There's a lot of moms out there that will be able to understand and relate. And it may even be some moms who sons have.
Take care of your baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
All right.
Happy New Year.
You too.